Welcome to the QAV podcast. My name is Cameron. This is a weekly investing podcast where I chat with my friend Tony. Tony's a very successful investor. He's been doing it for about 30 years. His returns on average are about double the market over that period of time. And he's able to get those returns because he developed a system of value investing that we call QAV, quality at value. How do you find good quality companies and how do you buy them at a discount to their intrinsic value? It's basically a scoring system. We look at the fundamentals of the companies, and that's what we teach our club members. In terms of the podcast, we have a free episode each week, goes for about half an hour. That's what you're listening to now. We have a longer episode, usually goes for an hour to an hour and a half. And I'll tell you more about that at the end of the episode. Anyway, let's get into this week's show.
No do I try.
Welcome to QAV episode 711, 711, kind of a 911 here, had technical issues. This is the 12th of March, 2024, TK. How are you?
Good. It's 2:30, 12th of March, 2024. So I've had half an hour of fun and games.
It's time to go to the dentist, 2:30. bit of a wild and crazy week on the stock market, Tony.
Especially yesterday.
For anyone paying attention, it kind of was going uppity-uppity-up last week, and then Monday just crashed back to where it was at the beginning of the week, really. It's not like it's fallen by that much, but, you know, in the grand scheme of things.
But it was almost a 2% drop in a day, which is unusual.
Yeah. So what happened to cause that? Did you make any sense of it?
If you believe what you read, there's some CPI figures coming out in the States tonight, I think. And so traders were taking profits in case the numbers were bad. It's been a strong, the US market's been far stronger than our market has. So there's been some profit taking in case of uncertainty.
Right.
So we'll see what happens tomorrow.
Mm. Mm. Well, always fun and games. I've got a pulled pork request to add to the list.
I was going through the list yesterday. I thought, I bet you Cam's going to ask for that one.
Wow, you know me so well, TK.
I almost started prepping it and I thought, well, it's got an ADT of about $1,000. I thought, no, I can't do that.
Oh, this is LVE, Love Group. Love Group Global. I had a quick look at it. It's a bunch of sex toys, I think. Sex toy.
No, dating app. Dating app.
Oh, is that all? Damn, I wanted to hear you talk about sex toys for half an hour. dating app. Oh, well, yeah, still fun, but maybe not worth it if it's got that low an ADT. I did notice at some point in the last couple of days, Tony, that TGA, Thorn Group Limited, delisted at the end of last year. I had a look through the notes. I couldn't see that we talked about that at all. Do you remember us talking about that?
Yeah, it was taken over from memory, wasn't it?
Yes, a company called Summers Limited acquired all of the shares.
Right.
Well, they were sort of a bit of a regular on the buy list, TGA. I don't think we bought them very often, though. There were some issues with them, I think. I can't remember what it was, but they didn't really end up being bought a great deal. But gone. Part of that thing you've been talking about for the last couple of weeks, just M&A activity taking companies off the ASX.
Including, we both picked up on this one, VUK.
I didn't pay everyone sort of drinking champagne and our Facebook group picked it up. People that for some reason managed to still hold Virgin UK, it's being acquired. Share price shot up 30% in a day and I didn't own it. I had to rule one it. Around $2.90 a while back, so I was furious that I didn't hold on. That would have been a good one to have. Congratulations to everyone that
congratulations
to it.
And it's what we were talking about last week and the week before, the shrinking ASX, and someone asked, is it good or bad? Well, this is a case where it's good.
Mm.
And probably Thorn Group was too. I don't remember the details, but I think Thorn Group was probably taken over at a premium as well. both companies on the buy list.
Yeah. So it's good if you hold them.
Yeah.
Did you hold VUK last week?
I didn't. I had owned it in the past, and I was thinking about buying it again. A couple of times I had a look at it, though. It was a Josephine, so I didn't get it when I had money to spend. Mm. But yeah, I've always liked it ever since it first came on the buy list a couple of years ago.
Mm. I've bought and sold it a bunch of times over the last few years and had to rule one it, I think, on a number of buys. But well, there you go. So that was a nice win for people that hold on to it. They're being taken over by who exactly?
The company's called Nationwide Building Society. So the background story of the Virgin UK is it was owned by NAB, National Australia Bank, many years ago when they expanded overseas. And then when that didn't work, they spun off what was called back then the Clydesdale Banking Group, and it rebadged as Virgin UK, and it had a dual listing. But most of the shareholders were still Australian-based, something like two-thirds, I think, because of the fact that they used to be National Australia Bank shareholders. And, it's been listed here, listed over there, and now being taken over by a building society in the UK and bulking it up with the combined network of both bank branches and technology, et cetera.
And paying a massive premium in order to grab the shares.
Yeah, that's right.
Well, that's what happens when you buy shares that we think are undervalued. Other people think they're undervalued too sometimes. That's sort of part of the plan.
I've got a pulled pork to do if you want to do that now.
Yeah, and then we've got a couple of questions.
Yeah. So my pulled pork isn't on LVE, which I did have a look at. Actually, the other one I had a look at too, which I'm happy to do if anyone wants, is Atlas Pearls, which I know I've done a pulled pork on before.
Mm-hmm.
And it's always been a really small ADT stock, but it has, because its share price has taken off, the ADT is getting bigger.
Mm-hmm.
So I did consider it. It's still not very large, but interesting that the business is doing so well.
Mm-hmm.
It looks like it's because of the pearl trade, and which immediately got me thinking, oh, it's a commodity stock. I should go and try and find a five-year graph of South Sea Island pearls or South Sea pearls, but I couldn't. There are plenty of articles about how the pearl market's taking off, which has obviously helped Atlas, but I couldn't find any graphs.
And did you get a sense for what's driving the pearl market?
No, I didn't.
It's not used in NVIDIA aren't using them in their GPUs or anything?
Not that I could see.
We're growing AIs inside of clamshells.
Yeah. The only hypothesis I could get was that the Atlas Pearls had put a lot of effort into making their pearls, what's the word I'm looking for, clearer, more concentrated. So they have less impurities, and the market is stronger for that kind of pearl than the one they were producing before. But it still seems like the pearl market has huge volatility in it. So Atlas Pearls, even though it's doing well now, may be subject to volatility in the future as well. But yeah, worth a look.
It's amazing to me that in the 21st century, there's still a market for some byproduct made by a clam.
Yeah.
We can make, fake pearls that look just as good, really. I mean, why are we paying crazy money for real pearls? It's a bit like diamonds.
It's interesting.
Really.
Yeah, it's like diamonds. But it's almost like there are some things that we can't artificially recreate. Like, go and make energy from the sun like a plant does using chlorophyll. Science still hasn't cracked that. Right? They can't do it in the lab. And people can point to differences in engineered artificial diamonds compared to the real things. You know, the artificial ones have like a very rigid lattice work structure, whereas the real ones don't. So, yeah, it's I'm not to say that someone couldn't grow a diamond that had a less rigid structure, but yeah, maybe they can't do it for the same price you can through mining. I don't know. But I had a look at Atlas Pearls and I thought, geez, the CEO of this company has the best job in the world. I was reading through it all. And the guy works 4 days a week, gets paid $200,000 or $300,000, lives in Bali, on a beach, like all the pearl processing is just done by hand off the beach. It just looks so idyllic.
That's where they do it. It's off Bali. It's not done in like factories. It's done like they're
No,
growing them
it's
in
done in
the
the
ocean.
sea.
Wow.
Yeah, off the beach in Indonesia. Yeah.
Good job.
Anyway, worth looking at if you've got a small portfolio.
We hold
But
it
I'm
in
going to do it.
one of the portfolios, light or the dummy or something like that.
Well, it must have done well because it's like, I think the share price has tripled in the last year or so.
Yeah, I think it's up about 35% since I got it. I looked at it this week because it dropped like 5% the other day
Right.
on the big crash day, but it's still way, way up since we bought it, which wasn't that long ago, but yeah, it's done very well.
Okay. Yeah. Anyway, I'm doing a large cap stock today, Bank of Queensland. And I have to declare straight away that Jenny's at a board meeting today for the Bank of Queensland.
So we're getting the inside story. Just that
And
Jenny's at a board meeting.
she'll be pleased to hear that the stock's a buy.
All
Because
right.
as a director, she's meant to buy some, and she's been holding off waiting for it to become a buy, so
Oh, that's
she can
good.
tick that box and get some. And I guess I should make it clear that Jenny doesn't know I'm doing this pulled pork. I decided to do it this morning after she'd left, and so she's had no input into it or any sort of clearance on it. And I don't think I'm telling any tales out of school. We sometimes talk about Bank of Queensland, but nothing that's not in the public domain.
Do you own any?
No, I don't. I may buy some. Like I said, Jenny has to buy some, so it's a good time to buy. And it's a large ADT stock, which certainly suits me, and will suit everyone listening. So it's worth investigating. Anyone who doesn't know, Bank of Queensland is, as it states on the label, a bank from Queensland, and has 154 branches around Australia. And it's a full service bank, has credit cards, a bit of insurance, business banking, deposits, mortgages, all the usual stuff. A couple of things that have happened in the last year or two, which are important to know. They acquired a bank called Members Equity, ME Bank, which is an online retail bank. So they have spent a lot of effort into both merging with ME Bank, but also into the digital banking world. And ME Bank's an online bank. And also, too, the attraction of ME Bank is it has a lot of non-Queensland customers. So Bank of Queensland is always trying to diversify away from its customer base historically in Queensland. The other thing which I found interesting when I was doing my research is that Bank of Queensland operates a business bank, and it has a lot of experience in banking in Queensland, and that skews it a bit towards agriculture. But the interesting thing, I think, is that slightly more profit comes from the business banking arm than from the retail banking arm for Bank of Queensland. So I think that's an opportunity for them rather than necessarily focusing on retail banking, which I'll get to a bit later on, is particularly tough at the moment and particularly tough for small banks because of the structure of the regulations around banking. So it might be worth their while to concentrate on the business banking side. History for this business goes way back to 1874, and it started off as Queensland's first building society, which was called the Brisbane Permanent Benefit Building and Investment Society. And the
Catchy.
market has got a hold of it and said, yeah, it's called Bank of Queensland. Very catchy, yeah. So 3 years later, it then became a bank in 1877. Went along doing that for quite a while. By about 1942, it merged with other Queensland financial institutions and became a trading bank. In other words, it handles everyone's transactions, not just their mortgages. And in the 1970s, it adopted the Bank of Queensland name and listed on the ASX in 1971. It wasn't until 1985 that it opened its first regional branches outside of Brisbane in Cairns and Townsville. So I thought that was interesting that it waited that long to do that. And that may have been because there was a bit of a building society explosion up and down the Queensland coast in the late 80s, early 90s. And it seemed like every country town was setting up a building society. And Bank of Queensland actually did merge with one of these in 2007, called the Mackay-based Pioneer Permanent Building Society. And it also merged with one in WA called the Home Building Society. So it was bulking up during the 2000s. 2010, it bought St Andrews Insurance Manufacturer of Consumer Credit Insurance. 2013, acquired Virgin Money Australia, not to be confused with Virgin UK, which has the license in the UK, but there is a separate business in Australia called Virgin Money, and Bank of Queensland still runs that as a separate brand, even though they owned it here. 2014, it acquired another bank called Investec Bank, and 2021, it doubled the size of the retail bank by buying ME Bank, and it turns 150 in September the 1st this year, so it's been around for a long time. So that's the background on Bank of Queensland. I'm pretty sure people will know about it. Turning to the numbers, share price when I did this analysis was at $6.21, slightly different today, but not by much. ADT for this stock is 10 million, so it's very large. And I want to point out that this is, like some of the other banks, a financial year that ends on the 31st of August. So we're using August 23 numbers, which means we'll get new results in a couple of months, which may change things, but we're using old numbers for now. The share price of 6.21 is way above consensus target by about 24%. So I thought that was interesting in itself, and we don't score it on that basis. It's also way above IV1 and IV2, and so we can't score it for that. The yield on this bank is 6.6%, which is just under our threshold for giving it a tick. So even though it's got a good yield, we can't score it for that. And for those that are interested, the ROE is only 7.3%, which is quite low. Now, banks often have a low ROE because of the way that their business works. They move around large blocks of money, borrowing and lending, and so they can have low ROEs, but this is low for a bank as well. Stock Doctor Financial Health and Trend are strong and steady, so it gets a score for those. And it's a recent three-point upturn, so it gets a score for that. It's been on the down, been a falling knife for a while now. It's just turned up recently. PE is 8.5, which is the lowest in 3 years, so we can score it for that. And there's no consistently increasing equity, so we can't score it for that. The big driver for this company being on our buy list is PropCap, which is 1.15 times. So huge amount of cash coming in, which is good. Net equity per share is $9.29. So we can buy this company for less than book value, which gives it a score. It gives it a one for that. The other big detractor, which I think was behind the company being below its consensus target price, is that earnings per share growth is forecast to be minus 39%. So it gets a negative one for that, and that's probably what the consensus price is being driven on. But like with all these kinds of things, they come on our buy list because people are expecting them to produce lower results in the next half. But the question is, have they found their bottom? Has the market factored in what's coming? And given the share price has declined so much recently and is now turning up, I suspect it has, but that's speculation on my part. Going on with this checklist, obviously no owner founder. There's no Methuselahs on the board. All that added up is a quality score of 10 out of 17 or 59%, but a QAV score of 0.51, putting it near the top of our list, and that's largely because of that PropCAF metric that we have. So that's the scoring side. I did want to go through some risks and opportunities for this company, and it certainly had its problems in the last 6 to 12 months. There's been a CEO changeover, largely, I think, around some enforceable undertakings that were forced on the bank by the regulator, and they had to do with the risk management systems in the bank. And so the bank has had to put $60 million into risk management programs, mainly, it seems, for cybersecurity and anti-money laundering. But, you know, obviously that $60 million not coming through in profit. So they've had to bulk up. They were forced to bulk up their risk management processes. There has been, I mean, the ME Bank integration must be, you know, challenging, as any integration would be. I'm not hearing anything or reading anything to say it's going any better or worse than integrations, but they basically doubled the size of their bank through that integration, so it would be a large project to undertake. I think the things I want to focus on with risks would be the mortgage war that's been going on. particularly amongst the big banks and Macquarie, the big five, and also to the increasing in funding costs. Now, Bank of Queensland has a bit of an advantage over the major banks in that it has a strong deposit base. So Bank of Queensland has to go into the market for less bond issuances to raise money for mortgages. So it's less reliant on that. However, Bank of Queensland being smaller than the major banks also has a worse funding cost. So the credit rating agencies generally require Bank of Queensland to have 100 basis points difference between the cost of funding that they get versus the major banks. And that makes sense. CommBank is going to be a surer bet if you were in the bond market than getting your money back from Bank of Queensland. And it's only 100 basis points, but that kind of difference in the mortgage war can mean that the difference between growing your mortgage book and shrinking it. And Bank of Queensland has shrunk its mortgage book this year. So it's not in a good place because of that. But additionally, there has been a bit of a historical bias against the smaller banks in terms of how much capital they have to retain to before they issue mortgages. And that started with the Basel II initiative, which was the worldwide rules around banking capital structures. And then Basel III came along after the GFC. And they basically say that the banks, which are called standardised banks, like Bank of Queensland, so smaller banks, have to carry more capital, which reduces their margin. And I'm trying to think of a way to explain this without becoming too technical. If you thought about it as a cost of doing business, then it costs them more to issue each mortgage than it does for Commonwealth Bank, for example, basically just because of the accounting standards, the way that they work to try and protect in the banking system from the risk of a smaller bank going under. The smaller banks have constraints on their ability to raise capital, and so therefore when they issue a mortgage, it costs them more to do it. That's a structural disadvantage for them, and it's always going to be there, I think. There was a bit of a narrowing of the gap when Basel III came out, but it's still there. So that's a risk to note. It doesn't just affect Bank of Queensland, it affects all the small players like Bendigo, Adelaide Bank and the others as well. That's something to take into account with this. And I think on the opportunity side, I've always thought, and I did have a relative who ran a building society in Queensland, and they loved the fact that they could put a branch office in Sydney and Melbourne and steal market share from the big banks for little cost. They didn't have to have a branch network to serve the service customers down there, and they could use their existing technology to write the loans, etc. And so Bank of Queensland, I think, has an opportunity to do that, and they certainly have branches in most major cities around Australia. The question is, could they be doing a better job of it? And I think that's an opportunity for them. The another opportunity for them is, and they do leverage it well, is their Queensland heritage, and so there is a loyal parochial band of people who will always bank with Bank of Queensland or Suncorp in Queensland. Their business bank has very strong ties into the agricultural sector, so there'll always be a strong regional base of customers for this bank. So somehow it'd be good if they could leverage that into other regional areas in New South Wales and Victoria or around Australia. I don't think they've cracked that yet. But I see the business bank as being the area that they could potentially get the biggest opportunity from. Again, leveraging the fact that they have strong ties to the ag sector in Queensland must mean that there's a market for them in regional areas for business banking in the rest of Australia. So that's Bank of Queensland. Just come on the buy list this week. Large ADT stock and seems to be turning up going into its reporting season in a month or two.
And the share price looks like it peaked back in October 21 at about $9.70 and has been sort of consistently falling since then. Sort of hit a bottom about, what's that, October 23 at $5.46. So it's slid for 2 years and is now at $6.12, maybe on its way up again. As you say, we don't really know, but yeah, so a lot of issues the last couple of years, you were saying.
A lot of issues, and I'm like, who knows, but given the context of the upturn in the share price recently and the after the huge decline, perhaps all the bad news is factored into the share price. All right.
Thank you, Tony. You'll get rewarded, I'm sure, by Jenny when she comes home for that. BOQ. And that's the end of the free episode of QAV for this week. If you're a new listener, I just should let you know how this works. So we have a free episode every week, runs for about half an hour. We have a premium episode also every week. It goes for another 30 to 60 minutes, depending on how many questions we get. It's where Tony answers questions from our club members. If you want to check out the premium episodes and all the other benefits of being a QAV club member, which is access to the checklist and the Bible and the private Facebook groups and the other comms channels that we have, invites to the dinners, Zoom calls, etc., etc., just sign up for the two-week free trial and check it all that stuff out. You can do that at qavpodcast.com.au. Look for the free trial button there. And if you like the idea of value investing QAV style but don't feel like you have the time or resources to learn how to do QAV for yourself, think about signing up for QAV Lite. That's our relatively new service where we send you the stock tips every week. And then we also monitor those stocks in a portfolio. And if they become a sell, we email our QAV Lite members and tell them that it's time to sell that stock and what to replace it with. Check that out too. It's sort of a low effort way of doing QAV. Still better if you know how to do it yourself, I think, because Tony could get hit by a bus and then where are you? But while he's not, we can do this. So check that out, qavpodcast.com.au/light, L-I-G-H-T. If you don't want to sign up to any of those, just keep listening to the free episode. And if you have any questions, shoot me an email. You'll find that on our website too. All right, have a great week and good luck with your investing. The QAV podcast is a production of Spacecraft Publishing Proprietary Limited, authorised representative of AFSL 520442, AFS representative number 001292718. Please don't make any investment decisions based solely on listening to this podcast. This is presented as general advice only, not personal financial advice. We don't know your personal financial circumstances. Please see a financial planner before making any investing decisions.